Good evening. It's good to be back with you this evening. It's good to see each and every one of you. We've got a good crowd of folks with us tonight. We've got some visitors with us, and you are certainly welcome as we are here worshiping our God in the very best way that we know how, per what he says in his book, the Bible. That is the simple way that we go about it. If God is looking for it in his word, we're going to deliver it in his way. And we're going to do that now as we open up his word to Luke chapter 16. As we studied this morning, we spent some time in Luke chapter 16, the very beginning of that chapter, and a story that Jesus gives to his disciples. We made mention this morning that also in this chapter there is a second story that he delivers to a somewhat different audience, because after the first story, the audience shifts because of what he says at the beginning. We had a lot of conversations after this morning and with a lot of different folks. And the reality is, and you probably were feeling this a little bit this morning when we open up to Luke chapter 16, the first story that we covered there at the beginning of the chapter, along with the second story that Jesus shares that we'll talk about tonight, can in and of themselves be challenging passages. There's no question about that. But I want us to understand, as we talked about this morning, that although there are passages, not just here, but in other places in the pages of God's Word, that may come across as challenging to us, our temptation is to do one of two things almost always. The first temptation, when we encounter a challenging passage, is to just push it aside. We read it the first time and we see it and we're challenged by it and we say, well, I can't get that. Let's move on to something I can get. And we shove it aside, usually to never or rarely or at least a long time to ever go back there again. That's the first temptation we often have. The second temptation that we often have when we encounter a challenging passage is to just get trapped in the mud of it. And what I mean by that is we get trapped in the minutiae of the words and the definition, and it's good to go into depth of study. I'm all for studying deeply God's Word and drinking it in and breathing it in deeply. But sometimes we do that and we fall prey to that so much so that we may even miss the point that God is trying to make in the passage. Man, we can't do that. We've got to find the point that God is making in the passage. And so when we come to a passage like this in Luke chapter 16, is it challenging? Yes, it is a challenging passage. But can we get the point that is being made by Jesus? Absolutely we can. Is it applicable to each and every one of us today? Absolutely it is. Because in the grand scheme of things, in Luke chapter 16, in every way, the entire chapter is about the dangers of materialism, specifically our attitudes to the material things that we have. And so in that very first story that we talked about this morning, in Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 13, about the steward that was unjust and went behind his master's back, ultimately getting fired, because he was looking at his master's things, not as things that the master owns, but as his own things. That's not how a steward operates. A steward manages the things of someone else, specifically the master. And so in this first story, we talked about the importance of being a good steward. Not just necessarily with the monetary blessings that we have from God, but all of the blessings that God provides with us, including things like our time and our abilities and gifts, and certainly our material or monetary wealth as well. We've got to be stewards and good stewards of those things that God has provided us with. It comes down to a decision. Am I willing to follow God, or am I willing to follow this world and the things of this world? And Jesus concludes that story in Luke chapter 16 and verse 13 by making this point, that no servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And the point that Jesus makes here, let's not lose sight of the fact that this is a story and a lesson given by Jesus, is that you cannot serve God and things of this world. There must be a choice. But the problem is, oh, we so much like to have it both ways. And for us today, we're not the only ones that like to have it that way. Even those at the time of Jesus, as he is even verbally sharing this story, there is a group of folks who would love to have it both ways. Jesus moves from this story and the lesson of being a good steward with the material things that we have and moves on to a second story that basically centers around the consequences of not handling those things in a godly, faithful way. But before that, there is a shift in his audience. The shift in the audience takes place in Luke chapter 16 and verse 14. Jesus shares the story that we talked about this morning of this unjust steward, and he makes the point there in verse 13, a strong, impossible to miss point, using words like you cannot serve both of those things. You cannot have two masters. It is one or the other. He makes the point. You are serving and hating. You are with and you are against one of those two. And as he's sharing these things with his disciples, which we know at the very beginning of the chapter, in Luke chapter 16 and verse 1, that he also said to his disciples as he's sharing that first story, verse 14 lets us know that there were Pharisees who heard these things. And the verse tells us that the Pharisees here in Luke chapter 16 and verse 14, who were lovers of money, Luke tells us, they heard these things and they derided him for it. I'm using the New King James Version. Derided is not a word that we commonly use every day. I mean, that's not something you're going to pick up on the street or hear someone talk about on the street. But it is a word that we're familiar with, because if you just look up the Greek word of this specifically, the Greek meaning of this word is to turn up one's nose. And that's something we are familiar with, that we see. And the picture is that you have these Pharisees who are listening, maybe from the edges, maybe even intermingled with the disciples. And they hear it, and they're not happy. And they're not happy because of the reason Luke gives us. We don't have to guess why it is that they're not happy. Well, we don't have to guess or to have the power that Jesus had to read the hearts or minds of man. We don't need any of that, because God tells us, he tells us why they're not happy. They're not happy with what Jesus has to say here because they were lovers of money. So you have these religious people who were upset at the teachings of Jesus here specifically because they were lovers of money. And so the picture is given to us that you have a group of people who with their lips in every way honored the Lord, but with their wealth they lived like the world. And so as we're sitting here tonight, the first question I bring to you, and certainly include myself, can this be us? Where we live a life in which with our lips we praise God and we honor him and we lift him up in all things, but yet with the things that we have and the wealth that we are surrounded with, we operate the way the world operates. And if that is the case, we are given here a warning over covetousness, I believe. As Jesus certainly knows that these Pharisees are in the audience now and the attitudes that they have, he then shares a second story, now with a full audience. And it is a powerful warning against this kind of attitude. By now you should be open to Luke chapter 16. I hope you are. Let's read this story together, and we'll talk a little bit about it for a few minutes tonight. In Luke chapter 16, now beginning in verse 19, the story goes this way. There was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. And the rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. And then he cried and said, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame." But Abraham said, "Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us." And then he said, "I beg you, therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment." And Abraham said to him, "They have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them." He said, "No, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent." But he said to him, "If they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead." Now, there is a lot going on with this story. We're going to talk about it as we get a little bit deeper into it. But to me, this is a great example of what we talked about at the beginning, of finding and coming across a passage in which we can fall prey to one of the two temptations of a challenging passage. We come to a passage like this and we read it and we say, "I don't even know what that's talking about," and we just move very quickly to Luke chapter 17. He straightens things up very quickly and I can grab hold of Luke 17 pretty easily. Or we can come to a passage like this and we can dig so deeply into what's being talked about that we miss completely the point that's being made. And that is in almost every way why I wanted to include this morning's lesson. Because these two stories fit together. They begin in the exact same way. A certain rich man, verse 1. A certain rich man, now in verse 19. It is a story directly following that. The Pharisees listening to the first story and deriding him because of what he said. And now he levels on them the consequences of this kind of attitude. So I want to take a look at this story. Hopefully dig into it a little bit to find some things that can be helpful for each and every one of us. Because as we've already said, it is something that each and every one of us have to make a decision about. How to handle the things that I have. And as we talked about the importance of that and a little bit of how to do that this morning, this story points to the importance of it because there are incredible consequences that come when we don't. In every way, I believe this story is a warning against covetousness, and I think it is presented to us in several different contrasts. Contrasts specifically between this rich man that's made mention and Lazarus, and hopefully you'll see in these contrasts the point, I believe, that's being made. And the first is, there is a great contrast in their life. And I think that's at the very outset, and I think it is on purpose the way that they're talked about. One man, the rich man, is clearly very wealthy. It's made specifically mention of the fact that he wears very nice clothes. But not just that, the picture is also given that he feasts, I mean feasts, every single day. He is not want for food. He is not one for parties. He is not one for things piling up on his table each and every day. He fills his table with food. He fills his back with fine clothes. But there's another man mentioned, Lazarus. Sick with sores. Even though not mentioned here, I think it is assumed that he's probably crippled in some way. Laid at the gate of this man's house. There's lots of pictures in the New Testament of people who are unable to provide for themselves being laid at a gate of some sort where people would be coming and going. That would be the reason that they would be there. But here is not a picture of someone who was laid at the gate of the city that may have lots of ways in. Here was a man, Lazarus, who was laid at the very gate of this rich man's house. And so I want you to apply that picture to your mind. This was not at a gate that had lots of ways into the city, and you may have passed Lazarus or you may not have. He was at the very gate of this man's house. Each and every day he would have to walk right past this guy. I don't know why I didn't do that up there, but I could have walked up there just the same. But each and every day, he would have to walk past this guy every single day. And the text tells us that Lazarus was there just hoping for a crumb off of this rich man's table. But was he paying any attention? Not from this rich man. The text tells us is the only attention that Lazarus received were from dogs licking at his sores. Even though he had a man walk past him every day that was blessed with the means to help him in every way. But this rich man, who is unnamed to us here, makes a decision not to share what he has been blessed with, but to hoard for himself. You see, this rich man here, the problem was not that he was wealthy. That's not the problem. The problem that this man has is that he had no concept of stewardship. You see, that's the whole point of Jesus' first story. And now he paints a picture of someone who has no concept of that. He's not interested in anyone else. He is only interested in himself. And so at the very outset, there is an incredible contrast in their life. Someone who is begging for help and someone who is refusing to help. But secondly, there is a contrast in their death. You may say right here from the outset that there isn't. There isn't a contrast in their death. That's one thing in this story. They have the same. That's the point that preachers often make with this story, right? And you're going to go against that in every way. I've heard lessons on this, and that's one of the points that's made. Is that in their death, they both died. That's the exact same. And yes, I guess they both die. But I want you to look closely about what's said about their deaths, because this is when their contrast remains starkly different. And I want you to understand the contrast in their life, stark differences. And the contrast in their death, stark differences. And I'll give you the last point. It'll be a contrast in their eternities, and it is stark difference. But what's the story? What's the text tell us? You have one man, Lazarus, who dies. And the text tells us that he is carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man dies and is buried. Now, we can sit back and do our best to try to analyze what it means to be carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. and we can pull out books and commentaries and read up on that. But let's just logically take a step back and think, is there a difference in those two things? To me, it sounds pretty great to be carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. But this rich man, he dies, and the text tells us he was buried. That's it. So yes, is there similarities in the fact that they both die? For sure. But still in this text, there is an incredible difference. And one thing that we must understand from this story, and one thing that everybody has to understand as the next point that's about to be made, is that Jesus is talking here certainly about the consequences that come from covetousness, the consequences that come from being poor stewards, the consequences that come from choosing mammon over God. But the point is made that death is not the end in any way. It is only the beginning of a whole new existence. And we can hear from all over society people to try to talk themselves into the fact that once death occurs, that is the end of all things. That we just go to some sleep type of situation, or we just end, and that's all she wrote. And there are a lot of people that believe that. But I'll tell you why that is. To believe that is far better for some than to believe the picture that's given to us here. You see, death is not the end, but it is the beginning of something new and something whole. For the Christian, death means present with God. For those who are lost, death means that you are away from God, forever in torment. And so that brings us to the last picture or contrast that's given. As we made mention already, there is an incredible contrast in their eternity. There are a lot of questions that we can have about this passage here. What do all these things mean? What's it really mean that this conversation takes place between this rich man and Abraham? Can we see into one place or see into the other? There's a lot of questions that will come. I'm going to encourage you, as we certainly can chat about those things, to in no way lose sight of the point that Jesus is making here. As we read this story, what stands out? What stands out for us? I'll tell you what stands out for me. The first thing that stands out for me is that both the rich man and Lazarus, specifically the rich man, as he continues to make conversation, are in every way conscious. What that means is you have one who is enjoying great comfort and the other who is suffering in torment. And that's important because, did you take notice? Torment is used over and over and over again in this verse, in this passage. And it's good for us to read a passage like this because in every way, unlike the rich man here, I won't answer this for Lazarus, but unlike the rich man, it is always profitable for each and every one of us, and I'm going to encourage us to do it right now and continue to do it. It is always profitable to ponder our eternal destiny. It's always profitable to think about it, to ask that question, to consider it. Always profitable to do that. Where do I want to spend eternity? The easy question. Am I molding my life that fits that desire? a much different question. But it is always profitable to ponder our eternal destiny. Always. As I was studying for this, I ran across a conversation and ended up being a pretty well-known quote specifically from C.S. Lewis. As was giving a question and answer situation, and someone came up and asked him, was told specifically about a gravestone. And the gravestone was told that it read this: "Here lies an atheist, all dressed up with no place to go." And the person answering the question thought that was kind of a funny little thing, you know, to put on a gravestone that, you know, here lies an atheist dressed up with no place to go. And C.S. Lewis quietly responds, "I bet he wishes that were so." And I thought, man, that was good. Unlike the quote that I stole this morning, his name was written all over this, so I can't take this one. It's striking to me, since I was really focused on contrasts in putting this lesson together, that the rich man asks for just a drop of water for relief. And what hit me was the incredibly stark contrast from his feasting every day. And he's begging for a drop of water. But in the midst of this, and I think where it helps per application for us, is that that's simply in no way going to happen. And he's given two reasons why that's not going to take place. Did you take notice of those reasons? They're very helpful with application and keeping our context true in Luke chapter 16. When he says specifically again in verse 24, he cried and said, "Father Abraham, have mercy and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame." And Abraham says, listen, that's not possible, and gives him two reasons. And the first reason is important. He says, but Abraham said, "Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things. What did you do with those things? You do with those things?" And then the second reason he gives, the first being the character of the rich man, and the second, the character of this eternal state that they're in. There's no second chances. There's no getting out for good behavior. There is a great gulf fixed, and one cannot make the leap to the other. You know, sometimes we read a passage like this and we read about the torment that's taking place here and in other places that we read from our reading in the Gospel of Mark that paints a picture that it'll be so terrible to spend eternity in hell that we should in every way be willing to chop off our hands or pluck out our eyes if it would keep us from going there. But maybe we ask sometimes, and others do, how can God, a loving God, permit such a place to exist like this? Or even to send people there? The answer to that is simple, I think. God's love, which is perfect, God's love is a holy love. It's not shallow sentiment that we throw out there with that word sometimes, like I love banana pudding, and I do. Keep the banana pudding coming, that'd be great. But God's love is not some shallow sentiment. And what sin is rebellion against that love. And the reality becomes clear that God doesn't send people to a place like this. They ultimately send themselves. It's a decision, a life decision that's made. A decision like the one we've talked about in chapter 16 and verse 13. Who's going to be my master? The man begs to get this message to his brothers. And the point is made that they have the message already. And ultimately, so do we. the words of God are powerful enough to keep someone from spending eternity in torment and spending eternity with Him. It's the power of the gospel. It's the power of God's word in every way. And so as we close, I want to share with you one more thought. We have to remember in every way, especially here, that the rich man wasn't condemned because he was rich. Or Lazarus wasn't saved because he was poor. That's not the point that's being made here in every way. The rich man was condemned because he trusted in his riches instead of trusting in the Lord. That comes exactly from the reason Jesus tells this story in the first place. The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, derided him. And so he shares a story that paints this picture of a man who trusted in his riches instead of trusting in God, and the incredibly terrible consequences that come from that. And so I was putting this lesson together. One passage kept always popping up into my mind. It was a passage like this one. In Mark chapter 8 and verse 36. What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? I heard Ralph Walker once say, a good friend of mine, when talking about this passage, and it's right. He says we often make this point about if we were able to gain the whole world, and think about the significance of that and how much that would be. What would it profit if we gained the whole world and lose his own soul? And I heard him make the point once. The sad thing is we often give our souls away for much, much, much less than the whole world. What a powerful thought that is. But what a great question to end on. It's a rhetorical one. What will it profit if a man, if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Well, what he profits, I guess, if you want to think about it, is eternal torment. So how do we handle the things that we have? The blessings that we've been provided with? How do we handle temptations in the area of covetousness and greed? How do we handle living in a world, in a society like ours that is so affluent in comparison to other places? How do we deal with those advantages that we have and ultimately temptations that we have? Are we good stewards of ultimate blessings from God? An understanding that all the things that are surrounding me are not my own, but they are gifts from God. They are His. Am I hoarding those for myself, like the rich man? Or am I looking out for other people? The ones that may literally be standing in front of me. It's a powerful thing to think about. But it's important for us to do so, because there are powerful consequences that come with it. I appreciate you listening so well this morning and tonight to this really applicable chapter in Luke chapter 16. About the dangers of materialism, the consequences that come with it. And I think it's something for each and every one of us to think about and to consider. Most certainly, for tonight, it's important for each and every one of us to ponder our eternal destiny. And we're going to sing a song of encouragement. And it gives us an opportunity to do just that. To ponder our eternal destiny. Where would you spend eternity? If like this rich man and Lazarus, your life is taken. Or like has been promised by God, who is faithful and true, Christ returns. And this world that we know is burned up and everything in it. What a great opportunity for us to ponder our eternal destiny right now. And it may be we can help you with something tonight. If that's the case, let us know as we stand and sing.